If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And I nearly forgot that little line there. That must be cabin fever setting in. I'm Tim in one TMO shipping container in South Manchester to another TMO shipping container in South Manchester where JB is.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
And yeah, I'm very well. Thank you, JB. And to another TMO shipping container in South Manchester, slightly more in the suburbs. We've got loads of bars and shops and stuff that are shut that you don't have, but you have a garage and a home gym, which I'm very envious of. Phil, how are you doing?
Hello, Tim. I'm technically in Cheshire now, because right. I'm about 200 meters south of the River Mersey, and you guys are about, I don't know, half a mile north of the River Mersey. So technically, I'm in Cheshire.
Finally made it, eh?
South Manchester. I wouldn't say that.
Mate, honestly, that you have some of the most valuable commodities on the planet at the minute in an Olympic barbell, squat rack and weights, because they're sold out everywhere.
Mate, I've been trying to buy a 24 kg kettlebell. Can't do it.
It was the best investment I've ever made, that home gym. It's absolutely brilliant. I'm so happy that I can still train as normal, or pretty much as normal.
Very superb. I've got a 16 keg kettlebell, but that's it, JB. You're right. You need a little bit more than that. Needs to start with two.
You do need more.
And Tim, you dusted off the rowing machine this week, didn't you?
I did. Yeah.
It was sub 7 minute 2K.
But no, not bad for this old, this old goat.
That is a very impressive sub 7 minute, just straight off the bat as well, with kind of no specific training for it.
It was the first one I did, because it's been basically stood up in my bedroom, basically where I hang my shirts and stuff, like most pieces of exercise equipment tend to be. And I pulled down on a Monday. I thought, right, what shall I do? I just went, oh, so let's go straight in for a 2K. First one, 2K, nice. Bosch.
What is 2K like? 2,000 metres?
2,000 metres, yeah.
Yeah.
Decent.
And sub 7 is very, very good. If you try it, just try going 1 minute 45 or under 1 minute 45 per 500, and see how long you can keep that pace up, because 2K is a fair old lick.
Do you know, I'm not going to lie, but I think half of these corona deaths are from people doing exercise for the first time in ages and just dying.
Wipes their immune system out and then they're susceptible.
Exactly right. The people I have seen running recently, I mean, parkrun, this has done more for running than parkrun ever has. But you can tell that they don't usually do exercise, because their getup is so bad. I saw a guy the other day wearing, they were almost like bell-bottom tracksuit bottoms, but do you know, like the old sort of fabric ones, not the newfangled ones?
I think I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, like the ones you might get in the 80s. Like nowadays, if you buy a pair of tracksuit bottoms, they're usually like the skinny fit ones. These were the opposite. They were almost like flared, right? They were horrendous.
It's like the forbidden fruit, isn't it? The second someone says you have to ration something, you can't do something, suddenly everyone's into running.
The amount of, and this is another thing which I've not seen for, well, you do see it. You see it so much more frequently now. People running and then stopping and then running again, because obviously they've not ran for so bloody long.
Yeah. So my my current, well, I guess my living quarters now, the spare front bedroom, which is where I've got my desk set up, my work laptop, my rugby laptop. I'm spending kind of 90% of my life in here. And it's first floor, bay window, looking out onto the road. And I've got a view of what's a reasonably busy road. And the number of people who have been jogging past, who look like they've never jogged before.
Yeah.
And there's a slight incline up to the tram stop and the canal bridge that I can see. And the number of people, it's like a maximum elevation is about 4 meters. And the number of people who get kind of halfway up and then start walking is quite funny.
Yeah.
It's great, though, isn't it? Health is wealth at the minute.
It is.
It is. Yeah, definitely. It has made more people appreciate the importance of staying healthy, which is never a bad thing.
Well, how do rugby players stay healthy? Well, not stay healthy, but stay... Well, they're not going to need to be primed for action, because we've heard today the deputy chief medical officer said it will be 3 to 6 months of social distancing in some form, which eliminates rugby matches
and
in front of a crowd anyway.
Sorry, Jay.
And every jiu-jitsu club, every judo club, every boxing club, all done, all finished. I can't help but think that the actual cure is worse than the disease at this point. I know it's all very, very serious, but at what cost? I mean, people's lives are getting absolutely trashed. Like the activities they do, the sports that they do, everything.
It is a good question, at what cost, because there's massive economic cost of putting the lockdown and the restrictions in place, and it's a clear trade-off between health and economy at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, how would you be training if you were a rugby player? Because I was sort of thinking the best place to be would be in one of those shared rugby houses that some clubs have, where like 3 or 4 teammates
are 100%.
All in together. Someone to spot for you.
Yeah.
Super fast Wi-Fi.
Well, the Worcester Academy House, that's the place to be.
Yeah, exactly. You've got some bloody company. So I know Sale Sharks have... Well, basically, last day in work was raiding the gym. We spoke about this last week, but I've been sort of nosing about to see what people got. And you're absolutely right. The forward stole all of the cardio equipment and all the backs got all the weights. So that is actually a real life thing.
Yeah.
So rugby could completely change on its head. We could have a load of Jono Lomus come next season.
Presumably in all positions, stacked backs and skinny forwards. Sarah released a video of the Dupree boys working out. Did you see that?
I saw that. It's like a ranch. What sort of place is that?
I could
unbelievable joint.
I assume that's just round the corner from me in Sale.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that when this got all like hot and heavy, they did a Meghan Markle and Harry, got on a private jet and, you know, got out of here.
Yeah, headed home.
Headed home. I'm sure that must be South Africa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must. Yeah, it has to be. Yeah. I mean, I know the sun's shining this week, but you wouldn't have been stood in a huge plot building with vests on, with a swimming pool in your back garden, lobbing a rugby ball over the roof.
Exactly. It's not Chester, is it?
Definitely not.
And by the way, they're really launching that ball. I can only assume that house is at altitude somewhere, because that ball is going miles.
It's an awesome video, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the third one must have been filming it with a drone.
Yes.
Ah, of course.
Unless they've got a tower crane in there. Back garden
or a helicopter,
quite possible.
Yeah,
quite possible.
In terms of the training, so there's some stuff that you can do and some stuff that you can't do, unless you've got a very good home gym equipment, home gym setup. So like rugby's a lot of, from a cardio perspective, it's a lot of high intensity interval training type stuff. So you can replicate that pretty easily with down and ups and short sprints and bleep test type stuff. But unless you've got a decent home gym set up, the physical weight training to stay at the weight that you need to be at to play will be really difficult for some of these guys. And I know some rugby players particularly, so like Steve Borthwick was always one. You have people who are what you call hard gainers or easy losers in terms of body mass. People that, when they stop training properly, can lose kg after kg after kg. And Borthwick used to lose, I'm sure he said between 7 and 10 kg just across the length of the season because he couldn't do the weights that he was expected to do.
Amazing.
Mid-season, he couldn't do it because his body's recovering from game after game. And this will actually be a similar position. So he'll have anyone who's of that body type will have several months at least where they're unable to do any weights.
Yeah.
And that would be significant. You'll get players who will lose kilograms of muscle, maybe a stone of muscle over that period. And the opposite side of that will put on a stone of fat, more likely.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I mean, one of the great things about being a you know, an elite rugby player must be that when the season finishes in June, you go off to your Vegas pool parties or to Dubai rooftop bars and stuff, and you look awesome.
Yeah,
they're gonna have to spend that just on their own with their mates.
How depressing! But I tell you the other thing, which will really impact the game. I don't think we're gonna see any rugby this season. But let's just pretend that we did. Now, Sale Sharks do a barbecue for a three-day event. So they have a barbecue on a Friday for the sponsors and VIPs. And then they have one on a Saturday for the fans, and they have one on a Sunday for, I think, kids or whatnot. So it goes for 3 days. It might go for 2 days, but I think it goes for 3 days. And part of this barbecue is a live training session. So you'll have Pete Anglesey there doing whatnot. And it's not particularly hard. They might have a few scrums, but they always do skills and team run-through. I can honestly say I've never seen a worse-looking outfit than a professional team just after the summer doing their first team run. They look like they're level 9. I kid you not, they can't catch, they can't pass, they're completely out of practice. And these are professional players. Now, mid-season, they're obviously a little bit more conditioned, but if they don't come back for another 5 weeks, expect to see exactly the same. When the first game kicks off, they will be rubbish.
Just getting that game, because once the sanctions are lifted and they can train as a team together, they're all going to want a pre-season or a mini pre-season. You could legitimately have sanctions lifted and then the clubs agree an 8-week period to get people up to a condition where they can play again.
Well, I imagine that they just throw them out there.
Well, but it's also the balance. So there's a player welfare issue with that, but the clubs, as we well know, have got no revenues coming in right now. So the clubs will be wanting to get them out there as early as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't want to do that at the risk of a poor quality product and injuring a load of your stars.
They do not care about a poor quality product. Like and frankly, neither do the fans. I mean, if you're going to give them a poor quality product, give it them now. Because if someone told me you're not seeing any more rugby for 3 weeks, after the lockdown, whilst we get our product right, I'd tell them, forget it. Just get on the field now and start playing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the deputy chief medical officer said today 3 to 6 months, which means it's June at the very earliest. So
we're not seeing any rugby.
I don't see how we're seeing any rugby this season. And I mean, the RFU have already called it for the championship and below. They've also, and I don't think anyone should expect them to have all the answers. They've not sort of announced exactly how they're going to work that in terms of promotions, relegations, playoff spots, all the rest of it. But for the Premiership, we haven't heard that yet. But I wonder if that sort of talk from the Chief Medical Officer or Deputy Chief Medical Officer might mean that they actually say, right, well, we can call this now. And then I don't know where that leaves everyone and everything. What we do know is that the players have been furloughed by their clubs as the government allows 80% of their salary up to £2,500. So for the majority of them, they'll get £2,500 paid for by the government, every single Premiership rugby player, which may well be topped up by their clubs. But that's a handy amount of cash for the clubs to get back.
Hang on. Let me just think about this, because I do not know the legislation at all well. If you're furloughed, even, you get the government cash, but you do not get your company cash on top of that, do you?
That's discretionary.
Exactly. It's discretionary.
Is that right?
So the clubs are effectively benefiting from $2,500 a man.
Yes. Yeah. Now, if your player's
a month.
Per month. If your player is on a top WAC player, might be on £500,000 a year. So
not really.
And their monthly salary is 40-odd K. It doesn't make a huge dent in that, the $2,500, but it is something.
Pays for the whole academy of all of them and things like that. It will be welcome cash, yeah. Much needed.
It will
much
will.
Needed money.
It will be much needed money.
On the subject of money, that's one of the stories that's come out today. Oh, sorry, JB, what are you going to say?
I was going to say, I've just done a quick, I think my math's right, but in a squad of 32, because some teams like to run a small squad, you're looking at the government only paying 1 million. No, 1,075,000, I think.
Over what period?
A year.
A full year.
So this will be 3 to 6 months. But you could probably double or treble the number, because it's all staff at the whole club, all members of staff.
Right, yeah. So yeah,
you academy players.
Yeah.
And coaches.
You could be talking about 100 people getting that
easily.
Yeah, but just in terms of salary cap, though, I mean, if your salary cap's at 9 million, you've still got to find another 8.
Yeah.
Just to put that into perspective.
I can't see this going on for a full year, even worst case scenario. I can likely see 3 to 6 months.
But you do have to ask the question then, don't you, when they come back, like, what is the sustainability? So when the doors open again, it's not as you were. They're going to have to... I can see these temporary pay cuts being permanent. I really can.
Well, let's get onto that, because one of the stories today in the rugby paper, which has been followed up by other newspapers, is that Bath they've all been given letters to give to Tarquin McDonald, the chief exec. Don't know if they've all sent them, but it looks like Bath are revolting over the 25% pay cut.
Well, that's the headline in the rugby paper.
Yeah, it's a bit light on substance.
So this was Neil Fissler's story, and it's hell of a get. In fairness, it's fascinating, because I kind of see their point. I think
the players
they're saying it's a breach of contract, or at least the sources for which the story is citing, which aren't named, are suggesting that it's upset because it's a breach of contract.
Yeah, but there's been, so that came out this morning. There have then been two announcements that I've seen from Bath, one from Charlie Ewells and one from Tarquin McDonald. So the Charlie Ewells one said, there are obviously discussions ongoing, which you would understand. It's not a revolt. The club and the players are trying to work together to resolve it. And then Tarquin McDonald has said the club are putting in place the 25% reduction across all staff, with the exception of the lowest paid staff and lowest paid players.
Yeah, I'm not being funny. I think if I'm a player, I'd say no to this. Does anyone agree or disagree with that?
I would have... So, the honest answer from my side is, it depends what financial position the club and the ownership are in. So if I think I'm not getting another paycheck because, let's just say it doesn't matter, but let's say I think the club is not going to survive 6 months without revenue unless people start taking serious cuts, then I would take it, or I would at least discuss it. If I think the club is absolutely fine and no issue, then maybe it's a much harder sell.
Yeah, so is this... Am I using this term correctly? But do we have a freeloader problem here? Because
explain.
Well, the freeloader problem is, you know, we all pay for lights on our streets rather than, you know, raising taxes. But if one person on the street decides not to pay for the street lights, they're basically freeload on everyone else. The freeloader problem in this situation is all the players get together and say, yeah, this is great for the good of the game. Let's make sure the club's sustainable. But if I was in the club and as a player, I think I would go my own way and either say, A, no, or B, yeah, okay, but pay me back later. I think I would suspend my payment, sure, but I would get my money.
I can understand that position. Again, you've got to have in mind the viability of the business and the liquidity of the person that owns or the people that own the club. So, like, if for example, one of the clubs is owned by someone who has a 30% stake in Sainsbury's, who are going absolutely great guns at the moment, or they own an accountancy firm that specialises in administration and liquidation, who will be going great guns in
my,
the next
my brother works for
months.
A company involved in cyber security. They're doing all right at the minute, with a lot of people suddenly going, I want people to work from home, but I want it to be nice and safe.
Exactly. Well, exactly. So there are some businesses that are doing very well if they are linked to a rugby club.
Let me ask, right, isn't Bruce Craig involved in pharmaceuticals?
Oh. So, yeah, that would definitely. So, I like the idea of RPA getting involved in the discussion to make sure players are protected. But I don't think there is a one size fits all approach for every club. I mean, negotiations are far more complicated than that.
I'd go one further, right? Which is, if I was a player, if the RPA. I mean, I'm happy for the RPA to represent me and for the RPA to say, hey, clubs, you can't do this, you know, on a sort of global level. I'm happy for them to do that. But actually, when it comes to my money and my contract, even if my club captain says, hey, what are you up to? I think I'd tell them to mind his own business. I think I'll sort it out myself with my own agent, and I would be in no way inclined to take a pay cut. Or I would probably say, pay me back later. You know, when cash flow improves, pay me back.
Yeah, but I can say as you know, running a small business, cash flow is definitely an issue. And but we don't know whether Bruce Craig and Tarquin McDonald are dealing with a situation where they're going to be reimbursed via insurance for their losses and things like that. And if they were, if they were reimbursed for the things that they've lost through insurance or government grants or whatever, then you would understand the players going, hold on a minute. Hold on, but if the club are massively out of pocket and it's going to struggle to right the ship afterwards, then I can see it would be the right move to do.
Well, I mean, all clubs are basically running at a loss, bar maybe one or two. So you do know that if things just carry on the way they are, I mean, the clubs are probably insolvent without the owners anyway. So you can you're basically playing a game of chicken with the owners. And the owner might look at you and say, look, no, actually, I'd rather this go to the wall than me pay you. But you only need one guy to step out of line. And as soon as that one guy gets paid, then everyone else is going to want to get paid. And that's where it's almost like a prisoner's dilemma type thing. Everyone has to stay. Everyone has to stay on point until one person breaks. And what do you do with that one person?
It's like that Mexican standoff in Reservoir Dogs where there's loads of different people with guns pointing at one other person.
Yeah. It's a great example of game theory. And contract negotiations are often like this. There are different people have different amounts of leverage and different needs at different points in time. And what makes this particularly interesting, and this is one of the reasons why I don't like the rugby paper after the Fissler article, what makes this particularly challenging is there is a huge element of this which is in the public eye, and there is information and misinformation being released into the public eye that I always expect. I'm not saying it's happening here, but I always expect there could be a little bit of a game being played depending on what information is released and to who, if that makes sense.
Great shout.
There is also the element of solidarity going on between the clubs. And what I mean by that is, I'm certain that some of these clubs absolutely have to take pay cuts immediately to survive.
Yes, I definitely agree.
But let's just say that the club who's struggling is Leicester. I just made that up completely, right? Leicester then say, look, if we don't cut our wage bill by 25%, we're going under. So everyone cuts their wage bill by 25% because they don't want one club going under, and they also probably want to save face a bit, and also if they can save some cash, great. But then if you're a player at, say, Bath, and you think, oh, well, these guys can afford it, then you start then you start to play up. So there's solidarity between the clubs as well as between the players. It's a very complex situation.
It is. It is. And it doesn't help when you have sensationalist headlines reporting a perspective on this in such a knife-edge situation.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it helps somebody.
Well, that's Phil's point.
Yeah, maybe it certainly probably has a slant in someone's favour, but well, it might not be for the overall benefit of the game.
Well, I'll just mention England Rugby have got quite a lot of PR. You mentioned these things happen in the public eye, and Eddie Jones immediately accepting a 25% drop in his pay was greeted very positively by the general public looking on at rugby. Someone who is apparently considering a 100% decrease in their pay is Joe Marler.
Yeah,
I don't know really much about this story other than I saw a tiny bit about it on Twitter.
Well, there are various stories saying that Joe Marler is considering knocking rugby on the head.
I mean, yeah, maybe he is. And just looking back at Joe Marler's track record, and I'm sure I'm actually just adding fuel to the fire of, oh, it's the social media abuse, or it's the way he's treated, or this, that, and the other. It wouldn't surprise me if he said this in a way to gain attention. I don't know if he actually means it, but he has walked away from the international.
You really don't like him, do you?
Only to return. Oh, no, I just think he knows how to get spoken about. And that in itself is an art and a talent and should be appreciated. But you just also got to watch out for the fact that he will do this. I mean, there is no rugby news on whatsoever. How better to get some traction?
I don't know. I think that's a really...
But he's an expert.
I think that's a really harsh thing to say about anybody.
Why?
I don't see a justification for saying he's in the midst of a national crisis. He's going, I want to make this all about me.
Well, look, he is great at making headlines. He's probably the best person in all of rugby at making headlines.
Do you think he was trying to make a headline? Do you think he was trying to make headlines in the England Wales game?
Yes. Mm. Yes, 100%.
I don't know if it was that premeditated.
And by the way, I don't actually think he probably went out and said, "Oh, I'm going to make headlines with leaving the game." But in his own immutable Joe Marler way, some people would call it, in his own ridiculously honest way, he probably said, "Yeah, I would think about walking away." And that in itself, when there's no news, is a headline.
Well, but there's no quote from him. I should point out there's no quote from the man.
Oh, is there not?
No, it's reports that, and apparently, and we understand that perhaps. So he hasn't said, right, here's an interview piece I'm going to do with you.
Right, I'm with you. Well, I don't know then. I simply don't know. I don't know enough about the story, but it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if he's made some headlines, because
the substance of the story is revolving around he feels very hurt by the reaction to what happened after in the aftermath of that Wales game, and he's deleted his Twitter account, for example, I think.
Has he?
Oh no, he's still there. He's still there.
I mean, it's never a bad thing to delete your Twitter account.
Yeah, yeah. My piece of advice: only log onto your Twitter through your browser. There, that way you've actually got to do it, right? You've actually got to make, rather than just pressing the app and getting all the notifications, just log in.
The last thing he tweeted was bollocks, complete bollocks. Oh no! Yesterday he retweeted a bit on mindfulness in sport, an interview with a Harlequins coach on BBC London.
Okay then, right, fine. And I assume he's still got the tweet up from having anal sex with a fans. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. Look, if he did decide to walk away, it'd be a poorer game for it. I criticise him when he needs to be criticised, but my overwhelming feeling is I hope he doesn't walk away. And I suspect it's one of those things where he just gets people chatting.
We did have this...
I was just going to say, I also hope he does not walk away. And he's got a good shout of getting another World Cup out of him. He's 29. He could comfortably play for another 4 years. He's right at the top of the loose heads in the world. So
yeah, the thing I always come back to with Joe Marler is, for all of the horseplay, it's that exact horseplay that makes you forget exactly how good he is. You know, the one thing about Joe Marler is he's probably the best loose head on the planet or in the top three.
Yeah, he's definitely one of them.
He definitely is. And I could understand why he feels hurt by it. I think two things can be true at once. One, it can be the wrong thing to have done on a rugby field. And two, the ban that was handed down can be a crazy.
It can appear unjust, especially with some of the other bans and reactions to other hits and incidents.
Saying that it was heavy-handed is not saying it was okay, just to be clear, as it going back over very, very old ground. Definitely. But what was this one? Another one, Nigel Owens. It just seems like the most amazing excuse for a brilliant name drop. We have this situation in rugby where we have a little pause, not a pause we wanted, but a pause nonetheless, which is leaving people to sort of ponder, where's rugby at? Where do we need to go? Nigel Owens just said, the Duke of Edinburgh said to me, why don't you penalise feeding in scrums? And the truth is, we just don't do it, and I think we need to. Is there anything else when we do get back? If you could just go, right, we've hit pause. When we start again, done. Change it. Sweep. Clean house.
If you'd have given me more than 10 seconds notice on this, a whole plethora of answers. What do I want changing?
Not straight in the line out. If the opposition doesn't compete, we've covered that in the past, but it's just a good reason to keep the game flowing instead of stopping the game.
If you're challenging in the air, the straightness of the ball has to be a lot straighter than if you're not.
Yes.
So it could be within the boundary of the line out if you do not compete. Does that make sense? The outside arms.
If they don't compete, I don't particularly care. I think there's got to be a limit. But if you're in the air and can catch it and they don't compete, unless you get an actual material advantage from it being thrown in a really banana way, I don't know how that would be the case. But
you can't throw it directly to the 10, to the standoff. As long as the jumper catches it, if there's no one competing, play on.
Are you aware of a law which says you're not allowed to compete in a lineup with your outside arm?
Yes. We touched on this ages ago.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous law, and I'm not even sure it's a real one, but a referee penalised what I thought was a great steal by our second row because he challenged with the outside arm.
That's got to be... That can't be a law.
I've got no idea, but let's just say it is.
That's a stupid law if that is a law.
But that should be the definition of not straight when grounded. So it can't go outside of the line out, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's still got to be straight within reason. You can't be going on the outside of the outside arm of either team.
Other things we could change when we come back is no novelty kits. No European strips. Gone. They're just gone.
Yeah, all kits should be your home colours. They should all be your home hoops or quarters. You need special dispensation if you want to wear anything other than hoops. All away kits should be the same. So Bath can have their hooped top, and if they want to change strip, it has to be white or black. I don't really care which one. But yeah, so there's never a kit clash. If you are at home, you can choose to wear whichever one you want. Just like the NFL, white kit and a coloured kit.
I don't mind change strips in different colours because that's part of the traditions of rugby. Like that the old England Canterbury jersey with the purple. The purple England change jerseys were brilliant. Love them.
But they never played in purple, did they?
They did like 100 odd years ago, apparently, or something like that.
Right. They had, it was a dark blue, wasn't it? With like a red and a red and a white stripe.
Hmm.
If you have they played against Australia, and Australia were wearing something else, but it wasn't the Australia kit, and the England kit was dark blue with some thin stripes. I'm sure it was. That was like a 17 game or something.
Just to circle back, during World Rugby laws of the game, during the line-out, 29B, once the line-out has commenced, any player in the line-out may catch or deflect the ball. A jumper may catch or deflect the ball with the outside arm only if they have both hands above their head. Sanction, free kick. So you can do it with your outside arm, but only if you have both hands up. If you have one hand down, your inside hand down, your outside hand cannot catch or deflect the ball.
So
it seems unnecessarily complicated.
Do you think that is because you might be using your inside arm
to fend
to pull the player into you and use your outside arm to move the ball away?
But yeah, if that was the case, that law is not necessary because touching the opponent is a penalty in itself, whichever arm you use.
Yes.
Very fair. Yes, it is.
So yep, I can only assume it's a safety thing. Like, oh, we can't have them toppling over if they're leaning over too much. But just let the boys play.
Yeah, that seems like one you could just get rid of, and it would have virtually no ramifications at all.
In fact, give us the law. Give us the law book and a black marker pen. We could do some. We could do some good work between now and September.
Yes,
indeed. Indeed, we could. I don't know if I'm. Yeah. Cell Shocks have got a new training facility. Does that excite anyone?
Where is it? Durban, Pretoria, or Cape Town?
I think it's very close to where they are currently, but it is rather posh. So that's some rather cool news.
So I mean, because their training setup was right next door to Man United in Carrington.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
It's a nice setup anyway. Why do they need a better one? This is one of the better ones already, I would have said.
I don't know. Well, you tell me, Tim, because I've only ever been to Carrington. I've never been to any other setups. You have, so I mean, what are they like?
London Irish have got a lovely one at Hazelwood.
Bristol's new one looks incredible.
Bristol's new one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's amazing. Bats is ridiculous. Farley House. Although, as I've said, lovely, amazing building, and it is incredible. But you can't just stroll out for a coffee afterwards. You're sort of stuck there all day. That's the thing.
Same as Carrington, though. I mean, where do you go?
Yeah,
coffee?
That's a fair point. That's a fair point.
There's a burger van on the main road about 2 miles away.
On the corner of death.
Yeah. I occasionally cycle past that Carrington one. It's miserable around there outside the ground, isn't it?
And of course, yeah. Worcester Saracens can just train at the ground.
Yeah, I mean, Worcester got an amazing setup.
Super fast Wi-Fi.
Yeah, but they've got an indoor half pitch. They've got all sorts. They've really invested heavily in what they do there.
Yeah, I like their setup.
I do like the idea of being able to train on the pitch with the plastic pitches. I know plastic pitches have got their issues, but the ability to be able to use it every day with very little consequence is really good.
I also think it depends where you are, right? So if you're in Gloucester, for instance, I mean, yeah, they've got a link up with Hartbury, but say if you're in, I don't know, somewhere a little bit more rural, there aren't that many opportunities to use other people's facilities.
Yeah.
Sale quite often will go and train at Man City it's very helpful to have two enormous world-class sporting organisations on your doorstep, which you have relationships with.
So when I was looking back, we're going to do another pod this week, and I was looking back to the 2010-2011 seasons, the Heineken Cup, the Premiership and the Pro 12. In 2011, Sale played a home game at another stadium. They were at Edgeley Park that season. They played at another stadium somewhere around here.
I was pitch announcer at that game.
Were you? Let's test JB then. Let's see if JB knows this.
Was this the Reebok Arena?
The Reebok, yes, it was the Reebok Arena. Reebok Macron University of Bolton Arena.
Did they fill it out?
Not really. I think they got to close to 20,000, between 15,000 and 20,000, and maybe 20,000. And it was a beautiful hot day. And was it against London Irish?
It was on 16th of April. I can look at
And what was the date?
16th of April, 2011. It was London Irish. London Irish got a bonus point win.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, in my mind at least, that was kind of on the downside of Sale. So when I first moved to Manchester, Sale were going great guns. You had like Chabal, Sebastian Bruno, Jolly Hodgson, Dwayne Peel might have been a bit later. There's young lads like Foden. I mean, they had everyone. It was awesome.
Oh, who was the Scottish? Julian White, right. Jason White, sorry. Jason White.
Oh my God, a sledgehammer of a man.
Yeah.
He's now an agent up in Scotland, I do believe.
Luke McAllister.
Yeah, who hated it.
Yeah.
There were so many names. There was just... Did they have Mapasua for a while?
No, that's London Irish.
London Irish. Are we sure Sale didn't have him?
No, I don't think so.
Look that up.
He was a hell of a player, Mapasua.
He was hell of a player. They had everyone, but then they lost everyone. Like, in one... Like in a couple of seasons, everyone just left. And eventually, the straw that broke the camel's back was when Jolly Hodgson left.
When he went to Saracens.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've got the rebuild up until now. And now, hopefully, things will be a bit better for rugby in the Northwest and for all the neutrals.
Mm. 12-year rebuild.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, onwards and upwards for them as hopefully they'll get a new facility.
Yeah, as you say that like only a true neutral could, JB.
Exactly right.
Just one other thing on the England announcement. So the board took 25% pay cut. Eddie Jones then did as well. Fair play to Eddie. This is on a backdrop of them anticipating to lose between 45 and 50 million over the next 18 months, alongside some other recent losses with the redevelopment of the stadium. So not a great period of time for England rugby financially at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say about this. The RFU were... I think they found themselves in a particularly sticky mess before coronavirus, and you know, like everyone else, how would they know? I think they're making the right moves to get out of it, but this just compounds an already tricky situation.
Yes, and they are in that, within that loss. There was 7 million. I think it was 7 million. I'm not sure the figure's in front of me, but there was a significant announcement for investment in grassroots games, the grassroots game across the country, it's certainly, I don't know any of the details other than that, but that's a good thing to be investing in for the good of the game.
Is it? So I have a real bee in my bonnet about this. What kind of club is... Look, I've played amateur rugby in the Northwest for a long time. In fact, I've played amateur rugby for, 25 odd years or something, right? These clubs should have very little expenditure. I mean, yeah, you've got to keep the pitches nice, you've got to heat the clubhouse, so on and so forth. But I do wonder if maybe helping these teams out, particularly a little bit higher up the leagues, is more about meeting player expenses or things that they shouldn't have been doing in the first place.
Yeah, so I would definitely draw a line and say, if you're investing in, so if that money is going towards floodlights or better floodlights or a better surface for the pitches or improved showers or whatever it is, anything that's like a long-term investment, they're going to make people want to come to that club and it a nicer place to be, great. If it is going to clubs and they are just paying some lad from two clubs away to come and play for them for 100 quid a game, level six.
It does happen.
It definitely happens. Then that is not, that's not a good use of anyone's money. Never mind RFU money that should be for long-term development. So
yeah, exactly.
I would definitely separate those 2 points.
Yeah, if you're servicing the loan for your new floodlights, that is exactly right, Phil. That is one thing.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine what... I mean, I always get confused with rugby clubs. What do they need all the money for? Mowing the lawn?
Well, which is the club? There is a club that I think got rid of their ground staff and let... I can't remember, and I don't want to besmirch a club. But I believe there is a club that got rid of their ground staff and then handed it over to the council effectively, and it and the pitch has not been good. I may well have completely imagined this, but I'll get back to you on that when I have some actual cast iron information.
Was it a local Manchester club?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay, fine. That's the other thing that clubs do, which annoys me, is they get into bed with the council, and then, in order for some short-term funding, the council will put all sorts of ridiculous conditions on it. Like, you know, you have to open it. You have to do things in the rugby club that you didn't want to do in the rugby club in the first place. Compromise is never good. And I tell you the last one, which has really annoyed me, because there's nothing to do at the moment sports-wise to report. A lot of people are trying to get the angle, or they're trying to work the angles. It's not the big clubs you should be worried about. By the way, completely incorrect. It is the big clubs that you should be worried about. They are businesses. They have cash in, cash out. Those are the people that will hurt. But the angle they're trying to run is, we need to look after grassroots football and grassroots rugby. What if the pitches get overgrown or some such thing? And my answer to that is, when everything gets back to normal, if your club does not care enough to get all the boys out to sweep the change rooms and, you know, mark out the pitches and whatnot, you don't deserve a club. Simple as that. If you don't care enough about your club as a group of individuals and a team, you don't deserve your club. So don't worry about it folding. It shouldn't have existed in the first place.
I tend to agree with the point. Obviously, the short-term cash flow, if there are people's jobs at risk and all the rest of it, that's an issue. But I think in 3 to 6 months, or potentially longer, depending on when the lockdown finishes and we can go back to normality, there will be some great scenes up and down the country of people, the boys, getting back to the rugby clubs and doing what they love doing.
Yeah, exactly. It is part of valuing your community and valuing your club that you go out and do these things. And if you can't get it done, you've got more fundamental questions.
Hmm.
Can I bring to your attention something which I read today in the Times, the Sunday Times?
Yes, please.
In the rugby pages. It was Stuart Barnes and Stephen Jones doing their top 10 fly halves of all time. The greatest tens of all time.
As if I read this. I should have read it.
Who would you expect to be to get into the top 10s, top fly halves of all time?
So okay, Wilkinson and Carter have got to be number one and two.
Yeah, Wilkinson and Carter, okay.
I'm a little bit biased here because I understand that these two writers in particular have seen a hell of a lot more rugby than me, particularly early doors. So any early names, I'll take their word for it. But anything from the 2000s onwards, I'm pretty good with. So Wilkinson, Carter, probably Mertens, Larkham. There's no Welsh guys that really stand out for me. Greg...
What about Jonathan Davis from...
in the 80s.
I never really saw him play. I don't know. 80s and 90s. No idea.
Yeah, I remember watching Jonathan Davis play. He was pretty special. I also remember from the early 90s, the 80s and 90s, Michael Liner was pretty special.
No, I never saw him play.
Grant Fox was in the first World Cup. Ronan O'Gara.
Maybe, yeah, actually.
But then all the old names you refer to are guys like Barry John, Phil Bennett. Those Welsh legends. Oh, the videos of them. Just you could go down an amazing YouTube wormhole, JB, just watching old Welsh tens.
I will discuss this in our pod later about old rugby and new rugby. In fact, no, I'll discuss it now, because over the weekend there have been a lot of classic games, and one I watched was something has happened to rugby, right? I don't know what I kind of think of it like Star Trek. Does anyone watch Star Trek?
No.
No. Although I hear that new Picard show is very good.
It's average, mate. No spoilers, but it ends terribly. I watched the last one.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm getting through Ozark at the minute. That's just amazing. What have you watched that?
Ozark, I couldn't really get into the first series too well.
It's good.
But yeah, I mean, it's nice to know that there's an alternative business route for financial planners. It's quite comforting, isn't it?
See you right, mate.
So in Star Trek, you've got the really old stuff, right? And then you've got like the next generation. And the problem is with it is when they try and go back in time, the next generation to the old stuff. Well, all the aliens look weird in the old stuff. So the Klingons don't look anything like the Klingons in the old series. In the new series, and the sort of in gag is when they go back in time, the Klingons say, "Yeah, don't talk about it. Don't talk about the event. Something happened." And this is exactly the same with rugby. At some point, something happened where we went from the old game to the modern game. I don't know when it is. So we
about
saw
2001.
No, it's maybe about 2001, because I was watching a game with people like Tim Stimpson, Will Greening, the hook. No, Phil Greening, the hooker. So
Names
are on ancient, and some of it was absolute garbage. I mean, absolute garbage. And then I watched the 2011 Heineken Cup final, which is a mere, I don't know, 12 years later, and it's amazing. It looks like rugby.
It looks like rugby now. Yeah.
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 And so there must have been a day when everyone woke up and thought, yeah, let's park all this nonsense. We're going to play it properly now.
So 2003, we said this last week, but 2003 had a massive contribution. I also think 2005, the awakening that the Lions got going to New Zealand, and the difference between Clive Woodward's overmanaged, enormous squad and the quality that was New Zealand at that point in time.
Yeah.
I think both of those are huge turning points.
Did you see the clip which I sent to the WhatsApp group of somebody attempting to pass a ball?
And you put this on your Twitter as well, didn't you?
Yeah. I was aghast. Aghast!
Yeah, have you put the video of you doing painting on Twitter as well?
No, I haven't.
Different type of video.
Very intricate painting, that.
If you wish.
You've got something in common with Nathan Hughes doing that, JB.
Yeah, Nathan Hughes paints Warhammer models.
I'll let you into a secret. That Vulcan that I was painting is actually a die-cast model, but I just wanted it to look like I was painting. Pulling back the curtain there.
Love it. No, anyway, I was saying about Phil, the old tens, you could still go down a good YouTube rabbit hole. Like, for example, that classic try, regarded as the best try of all time, Gareth Edwards against New Zealand for the Barbarians, when the move was started by Phil Bennett doing the most outrageous sidesteps of about three guys in a row.
Yeah, those sidesteps are incredible.
Anyway, but Stephen Jones' top 10 tens.
Please, please. He's picked 10 of them, right?
Yeah, 10. Number one, David Watkins.
No idea. Can't help you.
He played for Newport, played for Wales back in the day. Anyway, he was basically someone that Stephen Jones loved when he grew up.
Well, I'll take Stephen Jones' word for David Watkins. I'm sure he was a great talent.
The second best fly half of all time, Juan Martín Hernández.
Sorry, stop. David Watkins is number one.
Number one, yeah.
Number one.
Yeah, wow. Number two, Juan Martín Hernández.
Wow.
Not a fly half. Please continue.
number three, Jonathan Davis.
So fine. I remember Jonathan Davis more actually from rugby league, because I used to, my old man was more of a rugby league fan. He used to watch a lot of rugby league, and I remember watching him for Great Britain against Australia when I was in primary school, about 95 or 96, and he was amazing.
Was this the one where they were wearing the kit with the coal board across it?
Yeah, I think it was. The old school.
Weirdly enough, my parents went to that game. And they were not even rugby fans.
Yeah. And that's I'm just trying to think, are my timescales even correct? But I'm sure that must be towards the right at the back end of his career.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Number four, John Rutherford, Scotland player.
Nope, can't help you.
Number five, Michael Liner.
Okay.
He was very good. Number six, Phil Bennett. And now we get to a New Zealander, the first New Zealander in the top 10. Number seven, Andrew Mertens.
Okay, Mertens. Good.
Class.
Number eight, Johnny Wilkinson. Number nine, Barry John. And just sneaking into the top 10, Dan Carter.
Dan Carter, just in the top 10.
This is, as the social justice warriors would say, this is problematic, and I am triggered. with all respect to all those great players, and I'm sure they were great at their time, and they probably would be fairly good now, none of them, particularly in the amateur era, put in the amount of time and effort and practice and dedication to mastering their craft, which Johnny Wilkinson did. You know, just in terms of how he sets standards, that for me puts him in one or two or three. He's top three. And I wouldn't have a problem with him being any of those numbers, provided you could justify who was ahead of him. That'd be Dan Carter and maybe one other that I'm not thinking. But you cannot tell me, in all seriousness, that people like Dan Carter and Johnny Wilkinson didn't just play the game well because they were talented like the other blokes, but they changed the face of the game, how you prepare, how you train, like all of it. Johnny Wilkinson was running through swinging boxing bags, trying to, you know, work on his footwork. If there was any area which he was bad at, he would work on it, from his tackling to everything. It is a nonsense not to have him in the top three.
I agree. but then I didn't watch whoever the number one was who played for Newport.
Yeah,
in the 70s or whatever it was.
And like I say, Mr. Watkin, I'm sure was phenomenal. I'm sure he's very, very good.
Very good.
You know, if you're like part bricklayer, part fly half, you're not doing the work week out that Johnny Wilkinson is. you're just not.
Well, I thought you might enjoy that one, and it might stimulate some discussion. And there you go. He's done his job. We're talking about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. The genius is in the results.
Precisely. It's a skill to get people talking.
Other business? Like, what are you watching, Phil? I need some tips for this isolation period. I said I'm watching Ozark.
So I'm not watching anything current. Me and Claire decided that we wanted some light-hearted watching. So we're going back and watching the whole of Peep Show.
Wow.
Right from the start.
Oh, there's an amazing scene in Peep Show where he goes jogging. We were talking about jogging earlier, and it reminded me of David Mitchell in Peep Show running, and he gets really cocky and thinks, oh my God, I'm good at this, and then almost passes out, which reminded me of you describing the people running up your road. That's such a class show.
There are so many like defining moments in it. It's absolutely amazing. It's so good, so well acted.
I'm going to watch that again as well. That's a great shout.
Yeah, well, you treat yourself to it. You will enjoy it.
That is a great shout. JB, any other little tips?
Yeah, so the one I've got absolutely obsessed with, right, is, well, hang on. First of all, I finished Picard. Yeah, fine. You know, moving on from that. Actually, that's a real shame because it starts off really well. But the thing I've got absolutely obsessed with, believe it or not, is Formula One. I've watched Race to Survive or Survive to Race or whatever the hell the Netflix show is called. And it reminds me why I love professional sports so much. It's just the seriousness and the dedication to do something as trivial as win a race. I mean, when you think about it, in the scheme of things, particularly considering COVID and all the rest of it, it's so trivial, as is all sport. But I just love the seriousness and the dedication. And there's something incredibly glamorous about F1 as well, which it manages to convey really nicely. So, the F1 show, whatever that's called, Race to Survive, I can't remember what it's called, it is spectacular. And Christian Horner is very cool.
I'm going to watch that when I get the opportunity.
Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
In the Sky Store, they have, or in Sky Movies, they have a little 5-star film section, which I've been going through with the kids. I've been watching some films that are total stone cold classics, like Alien and Aliens, and Stand By Me and Forrest Gump and loads of that.
Do you want to know a story about
Breakfast Alien? Club? Go on, sorry.
Do you want to know a story about Aliens and why I watched it?
Go on. Oh, yeah.
Right, so I am absolutely terrified of scary films. Don't like them at all. Can't watch anything haunted, any horrors, I can't watch any of it. I've never been able to, including Aliens. When all my friends were watching Aliens when I was a kid, I wouldn't even go in the room. Hated it. And about 7-8 years ago, my wife invited around a guy who, when she was in medical school, she used to date. And he sat down in our lounge, and they're both doctors. He's up here for a course. He goes, "Oh, look, Aliens! Aliens is on TV." I'm like, I can't watch Aliens. I hate this stuff. But I obviously didn't want to lose face, so I sat through the whole of Aliens, hating every second of it. I hate the suspense. Hate it.
Oh, the little where the beeps are getting quicker and closer together.
Oh, it's awful. I will never do that again. Yeah, I hate scary films. I hate them so much.
Rugby documentaries. There's not been many great ones.
I tell you what, the BBC one for Harlequins was very good.
The News really Round. Or Newsnight, or whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, it is so BBC to put out some great content, but label it incorrectly. I mean, if you wanted to watch this thing and you searched for either rugby or Harlequins, you wouldn't find it. I mean, it is so incompetent. It's like they don't care about the money that they're throwing away, despite the great work that they've done. So, yeah, here's this amazing thing, but good luck finding it, which kind of makes it a little bit more special, I guess.
I haven't bothered. I haven't watched that All Blacks one yet, the one on Amazon. I've not watched that.
No, me neither.
Is it wrong to say that All Blacks don't excite me in any way?
Maybe we should. Maybe we should watch it.
Maybe I should watch it.
We should watch it and review it.
Yeah, we should really. I mean, it kind of should be our job, really, considering what we do for a hobby. I just can't get excited about the All Blacks.
I still massively look to them. So I have huge respect for them.
Yes.
For how talented they are. I quite like the myths surrounding them. Mm. And I like just the absurdity of the myths around them. Like the book Legacy, which I think I've spoken about this before. But the book Legacy is like it's a management guide, and it's linking, it basically links the positive outcomes from the All Blacks to the good work that they do, like sweeping the changing rooms and the no dickhead policy and all the rest of it, which is great. But you could write that book replacing sweeping the changing rooms with all of the bad things that the All Blacks have done, and it would be equally as valid. Like you're assuming causation when there is only correlation.
Yeah, it's like the secret to success in business. All FTSE 100 board of directors should have awful haircuts.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Exactly.
It should be all men, presumably.
Yeah, they should be dressed like in future for success in business. Dress like you're from the 1980s.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. It's as ridiculous as that.
What I hate about the All Blacks, and I do mean hate, it's not them, but I never feel I get a authentic representation of what the lads are like. You know, like the no dickheads thing is a complete farce. To play rugby, to start with, even to play rugby, you've got to be a slight dickhead. You know, just to even think about picking up a ball and running into another man as hard as you can, you've got to be a slight dickhead. Right. So the idea that they've got none of them in the team, my rule would be only dickheads. Only dickheads. So you get a feeling that you're not really understanding what these boys are about. Whereas someone like South Africa really excite me because you know exactly what they're about. They're just raw brutality and physicality, and you really get an authentic feel about, you know, what you're getting into. All Blacks, you never get that. It's just
South Africans' rule is no vegetarians.
Yes, quite. Like the French as well. It's so dysfunctional. It's wonderful. But the All Blacks are just too perfect.
Yeah, we saw it when we were in Chicago, and we were there for the captain's run the day before. And we were just chatting away to Nick Kennedy and a few others on the touchline. And when the All Blacks came out to train, we got introduced to one of their managers. He was like, "Oh, nice to meet you. Now get the off my field."
Yeah, literally.
Because media cannot be here. And it just come across.
Yeah, everyone in the USA setup. Yeah, everyone in the USA setup could not be nicer. I mean, there was. Yeah. And this is, by the way, this is in a time before podcasts really existed, right? Right at the start of the podcast, there's probably. Well, we were probably the only show in town in terms of podcasting, us and the American pod.
Yeah, at that point in time, pretty much.
Yeah. So the American team could not be nicer. And as soon as New Zealand wandered up, like, yeah, go, disappear, go.
Get out of here.
No reporting about what we're really like. And I don't know what...
Yeah.
Well, it's weird because what they do is they get a bag of baby seals and they release them on the field and all the boys club them to death. But you never get that reported, do you?
There was something like, wasn't it Andrew Hall?
Yeah.
God, I actually was doing that for real purposes, for population management purposes.
What was it? It wasn't to make gloves, no?
Well, it might have been. It was certainly reported as population management.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, if there's another use for those animals post-population management, that's fine as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. So... yeah, I guess that's the review of that All Black show. I guess we know exactly what we're going to find.
Yes.
So we are going to be reviewing something else on another podcast, which it will be in your feeds, which is why you need to hit subscribe and make sure you get everything delivered to you straight away, because we've got a review of the 2011 Heineken Cup final between Leinster and Northampton coming your way very soon. But before we break up on this particular pod, any other business, anything else?
Don't think so.
Nope. Let the boys play.
How's your battle station working, JB? Your rig, your pull up rig.
It's going okay. I've started in earnest. I'm looking for 20 straight pull ups. But it's difficult. It's difficult.
Pull up overhand or underhand?
Overhand, wide.
Yeah. Wide. Yeah. Fair play.
Ops wide. But yeah, I'm working up to sets of four, then sets of five. So I'm way, way off it. I got up to nine before. So
20 straight is good going.
20 straight is impressive, mate. 20 straight would be immense. Can I recommend what one of the fastest ways I got better at pull-ups was doing the, I can't remember what it's called now, the negatives where you just lower yourself as slowly as you can. Yeah. It really sped up me getting good at pull-ups.
I've got nothing else to do, so that and lose weight, I think, is going to be the quickest way for me.
Well, yeah, that'll be the quickest way.
Yeah.
There is a good technique. There is a good technique called grease the groove. I don't know if you've read about this.
Nope.
It sounds like something...
I think I've watched it.
You made the joke I was trying to make. Come on.
Well, basically, it's doing it little and often. So don't spend 1 hour doing pull-ups in a one-hour block. Do your 1 hour across a full day or even across 2 days by doing them little and often, which you obviously have the opportunity and time and availability to do right now because you're trapped in your house with your pull-up bar.
Yeah, I actually think pull-ups made me put on quite a lot of weight the last summer or the summer before. So where my pull-up bar is, it's just underneath my house. So I've got like a little flat thing underneath my house and there's a little, well, you can see it on Twitter, right? So I would go down there at nights when the kids are in bed and whatnot and do my pull-ups. But after my pull-ups, I'd always reward myself with a couple of cans of neck oil. So it occurred to me every time I went to do chin-ups, I was probably ingesting, what, 300-400 calories?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So you do 10 chin-ups, probably burn about 40 calories.
If and then that. Then quick chin-ups in, like, I don't know, as quick as you can, and then two quick cans of neck oil.
I'll tell you what I did last week, which is quite a good little workout, is called Murph, which is CrossFit.
That's the CrossFit workout. That's horrible, that one.
Yeah, so I don't do kipping pull-ups, partly because I can't do them, because I've never been...
And because you wouldn't. Them. Even if you could do them, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't do them. But also because if I do them in my gym, I've not got much head height, so I can't really risk doing them. So it is Murphy's a 1 mile run, 100 chin ups, 200 push ups, 300 bodyweight squats, and then a 1 mile run again. And that's
it is very, disgusting.
It's very good to do.
God, I miss
nice little test.
You miss what, JB?
I miss doing CrossFit.
Well, I'm doing some CrossFit workouts in my back garden with a kettlebell. It's quite amazing how much you can do with just with a kettlebell.
Not the same, mate. It's not the same.
I know it's not the same. I know.
No one's high-five me. No one's encouraged me.
Yeah. No. It's when they get into the whole handstand stuff and the kip. More than that, the kipping pull-ups is ridiculous. That weird little butterfly thing
like
they do.
I think it's it's misunderstood. It's part of the gymnastic routine of CrossFit, I would say.
No, it's I like a bit more honesty than that. If you can't do a pull-up, that's absolutely fine. Use a band and do a proper pull-up, but with a little bit of assistance until you can do a proper pull-up. Don't cheat pull-up.
Yeah, but 50 kipping pull-ups or whatever they do is unbelievable.
Oh, it's still impressive, but it's just I just don't agree with it. But
it's just a different exercise. Yeah, I've never really done CrossFit, so I'm a traditional man.
Of an actual muscle-up.
Were you?
Yeah.
You managed an actual muscle-up?
Yep, it's recorded. I've got actual evidence of it. I could do a muscle-up.
That's impressive, because that is hard.
6 kilograms.
But you did it with a kip. It's impossible to do without
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
It's impossible to do without.
There was a lot of momentum going on.
Yeah. It's still impressive, mate. That's a proper hard thing to do. I think that's probably tougher than doing a sub-7 2000K.
Oh, I don't. I can bang out a dozen muscle ups easy, and I can't do a sub-7.
I've got long levers, Phil. I've got long levers.
Right. Nobody cares
I've got low body weight.
No one cares about this. We're just humble bragging all over the shop. Anyway, let's move on. Right. Catch us on the next podcast. Hit subscribe. He's at Jay Beardmore. You can see pictures of his battle station pull up rig. Phil hasn't posted any pictures of his home gym because he's not on Twitter, or not at least where he wants you to see. He is lurking. I'm at Cocker. We're at Rugby Podcast. I'll let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.